gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. My guest today is Conchita Sarnoff. She is the Executive Director of the Alliance to Rescue Victims of Trafficking. Conchita recently published the book Trafficking about the case of Jeffrey Epstein, alleged to be one of the founding funders of the Clinton Foundation, who was prosecuted for pedophilia by the Department of Justice, and civil cases by some of the victims are still pending. In her book, Conchita focuses on the extensive allegations regarding Epstein's pedophilia activities and the numerous famous people involved. More than 1 million children are trafficked every year in the U.S., and the global figure is more than 20 million. After a decade of researching the issue of human trafficking, Conchita published her book to help explain the problem. I put a link to her book on my Facebook page for anybody that wants to get that book. It is really good. I got it. It is really good. I'll bring her on now and have her start the show by explaining her research into human trafficking and to tell us the latest scoop in the Epstein case. Welcome to the show, Conchita.
Hello, Evelyn. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. So, How many years has Epstein and Epstein-related cases been open now? Do you know?
Yes.
That's the longest running human trafficking case in U.S. legal history?
That is correct, Evelyn. The Jeffrey Epstein, the Wall Street billionaire financier, was arrested in 2005. The charges, of course, were solicitation of prostitution with a minor. Many victims, over 40 victims, came forward to the Palm Beach Police Department and filed complaints against Mr. Epstein, Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell, Sarah Kellen, Haley Robson, and Adriana Ross. Those were his key procurers. And Epstein, of course, was the key person who abused the victims. And so since 2005, there have been the criminal case closed in 2007 when the prosecutor signed an agreement, which is the non-prosecution agreement, given to Epstein. And since 2007, there have been multiple related cases to the Epstein criminal case, and there are two currently pending cases. One case in New York was filed by a victim, Virginia Louise Roberts Giuffre, against Ghislaine Maxwell, who was never prosecuted and, of course, never charged because that was part of the plea deal when it was signed back in 2007. And then the other case is, yes, I'm sorry.
Could you tell the listeners a little bit about this Maxwell woman?
Sure. Ghislaine Maxwell is a British citizen. She currently lives in multiple cities. She has been a friend of Jeffrey Epstein for many, many years. As a matter of fact, she was considered the bridge between Jeffrey Epstein and the former president, Bill Clinton. Her photo is even in multiple newspapers when she attended Chelsea Clinton's wedding in Rhinebeck, New York. So she was, because she is a very good friend, close friend of the former president, and she dated Jeffrey Epstein for a period of time and then became his procurer and a close friend, she is obviously implicated in the case, even though she was never charged in 2005, as I said earlier, and she was never arrested, etc. So Ghislaine Maxwell is a British citizen. She's also very friendly with Prince Andrew. She is the one who introduces Prince Andrew, who is fifth in line to the British throne, to Jeffrey Epstein and introduces Prince Andrew to the victim, Virginia Louise Roberts, who is currently suing her for defamation. The victim spoke loudly after the criminal case was filed, and she has been through several depositions, and Ms. Maxwell denied it publicly that she ever did anything against the victim. So the victim sued her David Boies, who, as you might know, represented Vice President Al Gore during the Bush-Gore elections in 2000, took on the victim's case, and he is representing Virginia Louise Roberts. His firm is representing Virginia Louise Roberts pro bono. And so this case is pending. There's a trial set for May, forgive me, yes, May 15th. So that's case number one in New York. The second case is that is pending is Jane Doe 1 and Jane Doe 2, two victims who were included in, were part of the 2005 criminal case. And those two victims sued the United States government. That is, they sued the Department of Justice under the CVRA, which is the Crime Victims' Rights Act, because according to the victim's attorneys, Mr. Brad Edwards from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and former federal judge Paul Cassell, the prosecution distorted the truth when the victim's attorneys requested information concerning Mr. Epstein's agreement. So according to the victim's attorneys, DOJ, that is the prosecution in the state of Florida, was not forthright in telling them what was going on with the negotiations. And in fact, according to the attorneys, Cassell and Edwards, they had already negotiated the non-prosecution agreement when they received, by the time they received the letters from the attorneys. So that case is still pending. That case is now, has been going on for many, many years, as you can imagine. So those are the two pending cases that are related to the Epstein criminal case.
Now, you're telling me that, that Maxwell Women, she said in a deposition that she didn't do any of these things to these girls?
Correct. Well, she said it not only in depositions. I think she said it in multiple media outlets. She was interviewed. She's a socialite. Ghislaine Maxwell is a well-known British socialite. Her father was Robert Maxwell, who disappeared, or he died off his yacht named the Lady Ghislaine in the 90s. And Maxwell is very well related in England. She, you know, has been on everybody's Rolodex for a number of years. She currently runs a nonprofit organization that allegedly helps to research and helps to protect the international seas. And so she is someone who is closely connected to people of influence, to very prominent business leaders, thanks to the relationships her father forged for her, and of course, very connected to Jeffrey Epstein.
Right. Well, and she was not only a pimp for Epstein. I mean, my God, yes, round her mom. She participated with them girls and sex acts.
Correct. According to the depositions given by the victims, yes, she was not a participant in a number of sexual activities with Epstein and with the victims, and she was also the procurer and introduced Epstein to many of the victims. And according to the other procurers, she was the boss. She was the one who everybody listened to and followed instructions.
Right. What about some of these other girls that they had, you named them off, have they been talking honestly, or are they still lying?
The victims who came forward? Well, I mean, there are so many depositions. There are so many victims that filed. As a matter of fact, after I published my book, James Patterson published a book based on the on-camera. Well, his book wasn't based on the on-camera interview that I conducted with one of the victims, but his book was based on that particular victim. Where he sourced his information, I'm not sure. He co-authored the book with former New York police officer, John Connolly. And so this other victim, who I cannot name for, you know, purposes of security, of course, of protecting her identity, she came forward as well, and she came forward to me on camera. And you could see that on-camera interview on the Daily Beast. It was I published it January 25th, 2015, way before my book and Mr. Patterson's book were published. And so this girl tells a similar story. I mean, there are just so many victims, Evelyn, who came forward throughout that two-year criminal investigation to tell their stories. And most of the victims did not know each other. I mean, many did, because what he would do, he created a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it was really a very well thought out scheme. He would never, Mr. Epstein would never directly solicit the children. On the contrary, he would tell that he would bribe, coerce, influence the girls to ask other friends who wanted to make $200 an hour to come to him and give him a massage. And of course, he threatened that something would happen to them if they ever told anybody about, you know, this activity. So most of the girls, being 13, 14, and some even 12 years old, were too scared. I mean, you just imagine a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old trying to go up against a 52-year-old rich man in, you know, who's threatening you and promising you money, et cetera. And he was very clever in that he never solicited sex from girls who came from wealthy families. He never solicited girls who came from Palm Beach proper. On the contrary, he solicited girls who were not, who came from underprivileged backgrounds, from broken homes, who had problems, et cetera.
Right, right. Now, Hillary lost the election. Do you think maybe the information and association of the Clintons and Epstein and the donations given by Epstein to the Clintons had something to do with her loss?
Well, perhaps it did, Evelyn. As I wrote in the book, I certainly believe, certainly since I started this investigation many years ago, that the information revealed in the depositions, the information revealed to me by the former chief of the Palm Beach Police Department, the information revealed to me by the new labor secretary nominee, R. Alex Acosta, some of it, much of it off the record, and the information revealed to me by various law enforcement agencies certainly points to the fact that sadly our former president was implicated and was closely associated to President Clinton. And unfortunately, or however you would like to perceive this, the former Secretary of State also received donations by Mr. Epstein after he was arrested and indicted. And she never returned them. And also, according to certain court files and media reports, Mr. Epstein also donated, I believe, $4 million to President Clinton's Clinton Global Initiative to start the foundation. So, yes, the implications are clear. The lines were drawn. And I think that this information, coupled with a lot of other information, not just this information, certainly sets the space for the lack of trust that was evident in Mrs. Clinton's presidential campaign.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, she went down to that island six times herself, to Orgy Island, Hillary.
Yes, both the Secretary of State, the former Secretary of State, and President Clinton flew to Mr. Epstein's island multiple times. I believe Fox News, I had him 17 times on the island, and then Fox News reported that he flew to the island, according to the pilot logs, 27 times. When I double-checked my information, they were accurate. He indeed flew to the island 27 times. So, you know, when you fly to someone's private island, that many times, and you are a public figure and a former leader of the world's greatest nation, there is curiosity. There will always be questions as to why that close relationship.
Right. Well, you know, I was worried, you know, I've always had the opinion, you know, that Trump is a pedophile, too, just like Bill Clinton. But then it looks like he's going after the pedophiles. But now he took that Alex Acosta, who was the prosecutor, he was the prosecutor that gave Epstein the deal, right? And so now he's appointed labor secretary. What's going on with this nomination?
Yes. Mr. Acosta, R. Alex Acosta, the former dean of the FIU, Florida Institute University Law School, is now President Trump's nominee for labor secretary. And indeed, he was the prosecutor, the head of the United States Attorney's Office, during Epstein's prosecution. Now, if you read the letter that Mr. Acosta wrote to the Daily Beast back in March 2011, you will clearly understand why Mr. Acosta, as he claims, as he said in that letter, felt, quote, assaulted, end quote, by the prosecution, meaning that he felt intimidated by the attorneys who were representing Jeffrey Epstein at the time during the negotiation, and perhaps he felt that he needed to give Mr. Epstein a sweetheart deal, as the media has coined it, because either his life or perhaps his career was on the line. And to, in perfect honesty, I believe Mr. Acosta was right. I believe that Mr. Acosta felt tremendous pressure. I mean, remember, the attorneys who represented Mr. Epstein include the former Harvard law professor Alan Dershowitz, Gerald Lefkowitz, Jay Lefkowitz, Kenneth Starr, Roy Black. I mean, there are multiple of powerful attorneys who represented Mr. Epstein who, you know, as everyone knows, they had chits. They're called chits in Washington at DOJ because of who they are, because of their influence, their power, their prestige, their expertise. And so when 10 attorneys with this type of influence goes up against the United States prosecutor, it's a little bit intimidating. So I do believe Mr. Acosta when he claimed that, you know, he and his team were assaulted. They were followed. They were, from what I understand, Mr. Acosta wrote in the letter that, you know, two of his team members actually were being investigated by the Epstein attorneys. You can imagine what he went through, and Mr. Acosta is no shrinking violet. I mean, he has prosecuted some pretty criminal forces, some pretty heavy hitters, I mean, drug cartel leaders, et cetera. So he is no shrinking violet, but I think his career was on the line, and I think perhaps even his life was on the line. And so he decided he had to play ball.
Yeah. Well, we've seen, you know, I mean, I refer to what's going on, the Pizzagate investigation, you know, into the human trafficking and the sex trafficking and all this global, and that all the people that are getting murdered, you know, that are involved in well, to begin with, exposing those emails that WikiLeaks let out, but then, you know, investigators and reporters are getting murdered. So when you say this about fearful for his life, I don't doubt it. I mean, now they're killing people right out in plain sight for the whole world to watch, and nothing gets done about it, and nobody does anything about it.
Absolutely, Evelyn. Well, I can tell you
pretty
just
scary.
From personal... forgive me. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you just said.
I said, it's scary, but yeah, you were threatened, weren't you?
Yes, I was just going to mention that. You know, from personal experience, I can tell you that when I flew to Mexico to investigate a similar case in Mexico in a little town called San Miguel de Tenancingo, I was literally threatened. My life was threatened when the director of DIF, which is the equivalent, DIF in Mexico is the equivalent of HHS in the United States. And this woman who was the, if you'd like to call her manager or, you know, the executive director of that, the local chapter of this in this small village in Mexico City, 2.5 hours out of Mexico City, she basically said to me in front of a security guard who I had with me and in front of the whole office that if I asked her one more question about the trafficker who was arrested and extradited to the United States who lived in that house, she would ring a bell and the town people would lynch me. And, you know, at that moment, you don't even believe what you're hearing because, I mean, who can pop? It's very difficult for your mind if you live in a society such as ours that seems certainly on the surface to be quite civil. As a reporter here in the United States, I can't even imagine going to someone interviewing an official, a government official, or someone who works for a government agency and having that person threaten my livelihood. I mean, I just couldn't even fathom that. So when this lady threatened my life, I didn't believe her, and I continued, and the security guard literally had to pick me up from my shoulder and take me out and say, that's enough, you're finished, there's no more questions. Sure enough, a few days before, two journalists had been killed. They had been lynched for asking the wrong questions. So, yes, it happens. It happens all the time. It's nothing new.
Wow. Well, and, you know, back then when Epstein got off and everything, the Bushes, well, Bush was in office, right? Well, yeah, when he got off. And so they would have been pushing to let him off because, you know, they're just as bad of pedophiles as anybody else that they would have been wanting to let him off. So, I mean, the federal government, yeah, they can sue the federal government for doing that deal and not telling them about it and things. But the federal government, the ones behind Acosta, were the ones that wanted him off to begin with, and they still want him off.
Well, he's no longer involved. Mr. Acosta is no longer involved because once he left the Department of Justice, the case, the Jane Doe 1 and Jane Doe 2 versus United States government that is currently pending is not against Mr. Acosta personally. It's against the United States government. And so since Mr. Acosta is no longer part of the United States government, he is a private citizen and now the labor secretary nominee, he does not fall within that jurisdiction. So the U.S. government, whoever is in the attorney office of the attorney's office in Florida, those are the people that these two victims are currently suing. They are suing the United States government and, of course, the representatives of the U.S. government in Florida. From DOJ in Florida.
Sure. How's that suit going?
I'm sorry?
I said, how is that lawsuit going?
Well, they're in talks. I don't know if they've moved many steps forward. The last time I spoke to the attorney, he told me that they're still in talks, that nothing has been settled.
Still in talks.
Right. Well, so Mr. Edwards, who is currently the one of the two representing attorneys for Jane Doe 1 and Jane Doe 2, told me that they have not settled the case yet.
Okay. Now, Virginia's case, that's about defamation. That's because Maxwell claimed that she was lying, that it never took place to begin with. Right?
Correct. That is correct. And whether there is a new open investigation against Jeffrey Epstein in any one of the states where he allegedly trafficked victims, we do not know. I have not heard of a new open investigation in New York, even though there was an article that was published just recently of a transgender victim named Maximilia Cordero, who is now 23 years old, and she was caught stealing from Victoria's Secret just last week. Transgender victim, Maximilia Cordero, had sued Jeffrey Epstein years earlier, maybe a decade ago, and of course had lost the case. And so when she was arrested last week, she came forward with all that information. And whether the government is going to do anything about that in the state of New York, we don't know. She was arrested in New York, which is where she lives.
Okay. Do you know reporter George Webb?
I'm sorry. Forgive me. The reception is not 100% great. Can you repeat
right,
that?
Right. Yeah. Do you know George Webb? He's doing an open source investigation of the child trafficking and the human trafficking and all of it that the Clinton Foundation was in charge of. Well, I mean, all they're doing is running, taking over countries and going in and opening up these child trafficking organizations and organ harvesting. And that's what he's been investigating. And he says that Epstein is affiliated with the CIA. So it's like the other day I asked him.
I couldn't answer that, Evelyn. I'm so sorry. I can't answer that because I am not familiar with that investigation and I have not researched it. So I prefer not to answer something I have not researched.
Sure. The other day I asked him, do you think that Epstein is talking to the feds? And he wrote back and he said he is the feds. I've been following
well, he's
his
not
investigation.
The feds. I wouldn't claim that Jeffrey Epstein is the feds. Whether he has influenced the feds, that's a whole different story. But I don't believe
CIA,
that he's a federal agent.
So. George says he's in the CIA, and they're running the human trafficking from Haiti and different places right through that island down there, right through Orgy Island. And it's awful. It is awful. The kids that, in fact, he started out following the money and oil to find these rat lines where the Clinton Foundation is doing these regime change wars and things. And what he ended up finding about 50 videos into his series was he ran into then the human trafficking and then the organ harvesting. So he's found that they're making more money off these human trafficking operations and organ harvesting networks than they are dealing the drugs and dealing arms.
Well, that is the problem. The problem is that the risk-reward factor of human trafficking, and mind you, human trafficking is considered modern-day slavery. I mean, if you think about what physically happens to a child when she is trafficked for sex, she is enslaved. It is no different than the African-American slaves who were enslaved during the 1800s. It is no different. As a matter of fact, it's equally as bad, as egregious, because these children are being forced to have sex multiple times, 7 days a week, 4 weeks a month, 365 days a year, and they're forced to have sex with multiple clients. And every time they have sex, they don't make a dollar. Who do you think makes the money? The trafficker makes the money. Because the pedophile pays, but the trafficker is the one who makes the money. And, you know, there's a very different profile between a trafficker, a human trafficker, and a predator. The human trafficker is a salesman. He can be a car salesman. He can be a shoe salesman. It doesn't matter what he sells as long as he's making money. Whereas the pedophile, the predator, is a different kind of human being. He is actually, he has a sexual aberration. He is interested in having sexual activities with children. That's a whole different psychology. And in the case of Jeffrey Epstein, he was actually both. He is both,
right?
Because not only does Jeffrey Epstein use these children for his own sexual purposes, he then lends them out to his friends, such as Prince Andrew. And according to this one victim, Virginia Louise Roberts, in her deposition, in one of her multiple depositions, she claimed that Jeffrey Epstein paid her $15,000 to have sexual activities with Prince Andrew. Whether that claim is true or not, only Virginia knows that. the real answer to that. But according to the depositions and according to the attorneys, she was paid $15,000 to have sex with Prince Andrew. So Epstein, in that regard, was the trafficker. He was not the predator. And, you know, and that's what you have to understand, that, that traffickers and pedophiles and predators have two very different psychologies and profiles. They're not the same type of individual.
Right. But Bill and Hillary are doing both, too. They're trafficking and they're
participating. Well, I would not, in all honesty, I would never support the claim that the former Secretary of State was a trafficker. I would never support that claim. The reason I say this
is
because...
Well, but you haven't done the research on this, right, Computer?
Well, no. Let me finish, Evelyn. I believe that Mrs. Clinton certainly had the power and the influence to do a great deal more than what she did in terms of protecting the victims. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it was under her husband's administration that the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, that is TVPA, our federal law that protects victims, especially foreign-born victims, and prosecutes traffickers in the United States, was enacted. So under her husband, in the year 2000, TVPA was enacted. Well, she was then Secretary of State. She certainly had the power and influence to ensure that victims were better protected in this country, certainly foreign victims. And she and her husband, through the Clinton Global Initiative, even though I believe in the year 2009 they had banners up in at the Sheraton Hotel because human trafficking was their theme that year, they certainly spoke around the issue, but they never did anything about it. There was never resources allocated. If you don't allocate resources, manpower, and money in order to stop this crime, it will not stop. You need safe houses where victims can run to if they escape from their traffickers. We have none in Washington, D.C. We have one in New York City called GEMS that's only for women ages 23 and 27, which is already too late. And so we have very, very few safe houses across the country that give beds and sleeping access to children who have been trafficked and are trying to escape their traffickers. That's a huge problem that we need to tackle. And in order to do that, we need money and we need resources. Something certainly the Clintons could have been very influential and certainly help support those efforts, and I don't believe they did enough. And I hope that this government, I hope that President Trump's government will support those efforts. And he has promised that he will. He, in the before his 46th day, he held a human trafficking conference. I did not have the pleasure of attending that conference, but I certainly was aware of it, and I was informed about the outcome of that conference, and hopefully things will get done. But we need resources, we need manpower. You know, human trafficking rests on three pillars: prevention, prosecution, and protection. And the only way to prevent this is through education, educational initiatives, which is what my organization is attempting to do. That's one of our missions. At Alliance to Rescue Victims of Trafficking, we are trying to educate children across the United States on how to identify the signs, who to call, what to do, and we're trying to help teachers and administrators learn the behavior of the trafficker and the pedophile. So prevention is critical, and it needs to start from the very beginning. The second pillar, protection, how to protect these victims. Well, you know, parents need to be aware. During PTA meetings, school teachers need to tell their parents not to let their children walk the streets by themselves, especially inner city children, not to go to the shopping centers on their own, not to be without the guardianship of an adult. We need to protect our children. And then prosecution, of course, is the last pillar, which is what will the Department of Justice do both on a federal level and on a state level to protect these victims and stringently prosecute the traffickers. But for all of that, we need awareness. For all of that, we need resources and we need manpower. And we need communities. We need people like you and your listeners to come on board and say, we're going to do something about it, and we're going to stop this. And if we don't have that, we will not stop this.
We are going to stop it. We are going to stop
Thank
it.
You.
And
Thank
since
you.
This Pizzagate busted open, you know, they've tried to shut us down, and there's probably a million independent investigators on this around the world, and we are stopping it. These world leaders are going to stop abusing our kids once and for all. And if we can't stop them to begin with, then how can we set up anything in this country to help victims of human trafficking when the world leaders are doing it themselves?
Yep, absolutely. Not only that, what's most important is if we don't protect our children, we will have no future, because children are our future. They are our future leaders. They are the ones who are going to create policy and enforce legislation. So we need to protect them. We need to educate our children. We need to create safe environments for our children. We need to create safe environments for their teachers. And we need to create safe environments for the benefit of all, period, full stop. In the same way that we fought for civil rights, we should be fighting for the rights of children. And we're not doing that. And I'd like to see that happen. I'm certainly have been working assiduously for over a decade now in this field. And I would like to see more people. Yes, Evelyn, sorry, we lost connection. I kept on saying hello and you didn't.
Listen, I've talked about this topic for the last probably 2 months every week, and every single week we get cut off, except when I had them call us, and this time we got cut off anyhow. One time we got cut off, and they cut off the whole internet to PRN for 2.5 hours.
Oh, that's interesting.
They don't want this topic talked about.
Nope. They don't. That's why, you know, am I on the air right now?
Yes.
Okay. No, there are things that, unfortunately, we need to be very careful about.
Right.
And I think that human trafficking is, as you might have read, a crime whose profits exceed $67 billion worldwide. And it is a transnational crime. It exists not only in the United States, it exists everywhere in the world. The drug cartels are the networks that mostly traffic children. Yes, there are multiple individuals, such as Jeffrey Epstein, who traffics a large number of children, but that's for his own personal gain and for his, you know, own sexual pleasure. But there are many more organizations, such as the Mexican drug cartels, the Colombian drug cartels, the Salvadorian drug cartels, who traffic children and launder money. And, you know, this is a huge, huge issue. Money laundering, I mean, this covers so many different topics: migration, national security, immigration, money laundering, that one must be careful, because it does impact. And absolutely, the governments and the leaders of our world are certainly aware of what is going on. I mean, why would three presidents, one after another, beginning with President Clinton, then President Obama, and now President Trump, why would these three presidents even bring up the issue of human trafficking if it weren't real and if it didn't impact us at so many levels? And as you know, the Democratic National Committee, just last year in July, when Secretary of State Hillary Clinton accepted the nomination of her party, they gave a national platform and politicized the issue of human trafficking. They brought on stage a victim of labor trafficking, not sex trafficking, but of labor trafficking. They brought this Southeast Asian girl on stage and gave her 45 minutes and a national platform to talk about trafficking. Now, the DNC would have never done that unless this impacts millions of children, and it has tentacles everywhere, including the government.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, when you said that one gal, that Maximilia Cordero, got caught shoplifting at Victoria's Secret. Now, Victoria's Secret, isn't that owned by somebody that's in cahoots with Epstein?
Well, Victoria's Secret is owned by Leslie Wexner. And Mr. Wexler, who lives in New Albany, Ohio, was Mr. Epstein's best friend. As a matter of fact, according to certain documents, court documents, and media reports, Mr. Wexner gave Mr. Epstein the 727 jet that he runs around in, that he travels in. He also sold the Manhattan triplex for, I think, a nominal amount of money to Mr. Epstein. And it was Mr. Wexler who gave Mr. Epstein the first $1 billion to manage when Mr. Epstein, after Mr. Epstein was fired from Bear Stearns for an, you know, rigged violation, and opened up his own investment firm in Manhattan. So Mr. Epstein and Mr. Wexner have been very, very close friends for many, many years. And according to, you know, people on the inside, people who know them well, and court files and depositions and media reports, Mr. Wexner owns Victoria's Secret. So one of the things that Mr. Epstein would tell victims, according to the many victims who came forward, is that if they did to him what he wanted, he would secure a job for them as a model, either at Victoria's Secret or at MC Squared. And MC Squared was another company that Mr. Epstein had invested $1 million in, owned by a Frenchman named Jean-Luc Brunel. And so he promised these very young girls that if they gave him, you know, sexual pleasure, et cetera, he would make sure that they could model for either Victoria's Secret or MC Squared. And so, yes, Maximilia Cordero, this, the transgender, now female, claimed in her deposition that Epstein had promised her a job at Victoria's Secret because, of course, of his relationship with Mr. Wexner.
Right, right. Now, what happened to that lawsuit that that gal, the girl, had filed against Trump? Do you know
I'm
what
sorry,
happened?
What happened to the lawsuit that, that, I'm sorry, could you repeat that? What happened to the lawsuit that?
The lawsuit that was filed against Trump.
Oh, well, there were three lawsuits filed. A victim by the name of, well, who went under the name of Katie Johnson, filed a lawsuit in the state of California, April 18th, 2016, while during the presidential campaign. She then, that case was dismissed straight away on technicalities in California. She couldn't find an attorney. She finally found, she couldn't file an attorney to file for her in California, so she self-filed. Then a few months later, I believe in June, she finds an attorney in Princeton, New Jersey, by the name of Thomas Meagher. And Thomas Meagher files in the state of New York the case. But I spoke to Thomas Meagher, and he claimed that this Katie Johnson, whom he renamed in his filing Jane Doe, had a witness, and the witness's name was Tiffany Doe, and that according to this witness, she saw Katie Johnson being beaten up by our president, and, you know, all sorts of allegations that clearly are untrue, because at the end of the day, that case was dismissed. Well, it wasn't dismissed. It was Mr. Meagher actually, you know, filed to have the case taken away from the courts, and then he filed a third time. And when he filed the third time in New York, just a few months later, the victim, Katie Johnson, came forward before the press conference that was scheduled, I believe, for December 16th of last year, and said that all of those allegations were untrue, that Mr. Trump was never involved, that, you know, clearly this was a political move. Now,
The question that we should all ask ourselves is, if in fact Katie Johnson's claims are accurate, meaning that this was a politically motivated filing, who influenced her to file?
Right.
Who influenced Katie Johnson to file this? I mean, you know, these are very serious allegations against anyone, whether you're a presidential candidate or not a presidential candidate. You can't go around saying that someone beat you up and abused you sexually and did all sorts of things to you and took away your virginity if it's not true. I mean, criminal.
If she admitted that,
for her to have gone forward with this for so long, it implies that somebody was supposedly protecting her, and somebody was influencing her and persuading her to come forward against both Mr. Trump and, at the time, President-elect Trump and Mr. Epstein. Now,
right.
Clearly, it was not true. There was no proof whatsoever that President Trump was implicated in this case.
So is she saying that this never happened? She made this all up? And if she did, then she should be arrested.
Absolutely, absolutely true. And what's more is, if in fact she was abused by Mr. Epstein, then she should file, because she does not appear in any of the 2005 filings, because I did research on that. And there was not one filing that I discovered and researched where this supposed Katie Johnson appears as a victim in the Epstein criminal case. So why on earth did she not file when all these victims were coming forward, and when the case was made public in 2006 by the Palm Beach Post? I broke the story in 2010, and then all hell broke loose. But before that, in 2006, the Palm Beach Post actually first reported on this case. They did maybe three articles. They published three articles about the Epstein case. So when all these victims were coming forward, why did this Katie Johnson not come forward against Mr. Epstein? That's the question I have.
Oh, well, me too. But, you know, it's like somebody just picked her out and talked her into saying these absurd things. I mean, about Epstein, of course, that wasn't questionable to anybody. I don't think he had so many victims that said the same thing. But yeah, about the Trump, I mean, this is horrible. Look,
politics is a dirty game. I mean, think about this, Evelyn.
Never been dirtier than right now.
Think about where we are today, right? I mean, just think about what's happening today. If you turn on any of the channels, be it NBC, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS, you know, all you see is today, 46 days into President Trump's administration, and we are continuing to have demonstrations, both pro and con. In some cases, such as the Saturday, March 4th rally called March for Trump Rally, held in Berkeley, California, the opposing voices turned violent. And you ask yourself, why is this continuing? I mean, you know, we have lost.
Soros is paying them activists to go in there and be violent and mean to people. And then the media pumps it up. It doesn't tell the truth. And so they think that, you know, the people are really objecting to Trump and this is BS. I mean, I don't like the guy at all. And I didn't vote for him. But this is ridiculous for them to keep allowing these violent protests to go on, that George Soros is funding these protesters. And the thing is, this is such a big distraction. And while everybody's talking about this BS about Russia the Trump, whether Trump was in cahoots with Russia, they're ignoring everything. Fukushima is ready to blow up. We could be dead tomorrow. The chemtrail spraying that they're doing is killing all of us. Nobody is paying attention to any of these important things that are going on in the world, because the media just puts out this garbage about Russia and Trump and the big distraction and the main things that are happening in the world. This world could end tomorrow, and they're all caught up in this BS about the Trump election and Russia and stuff.
You said something very important. this is a lot of distraction. And, you know, in the business of public relations, right, one of the first rules of public relations when you're representing a client, and if there's the client is in trouble, the first thing you do as a PR person is you switch the witch, which means deviate attention over there so people don't really pay attention to what's happening over here. And that is a lot of what's happening. And unfortunately, and I'm not talking politics because I refuse to talk politics, but what I am saying is that whether you are pro or against President Trump, you know, the detractors of President Trump are losing credibility by becoming violent and sometimes fanatical in the way that they express their views. Everybody has a right to a political position. Everyone in this country. That's what our forefathers fought for. I come from Cuba. In Cuba, we are actually, if you were to take that backdrop, we Americans are behaving like Cuba, where since 1959, only pro-Castro rallies are allowed, and anything else that smacks of anti-Castro rhetoric is instantly dismantled, censored, and felled. And, you know, the underground images of dissenters opposing the Castro policies are no different in Havana than those recently exposed on our national television. And in spite of President Obama's conciliatory 2014 executive order, protesters denouncing the government, the Cuban government today, continue to be corralled, beaten, and arrested. Well, guess what? The same thing is happening in this country. We cannot allow that. We have lost trust and we have lost respect. And without those two elements, we cannot forge relationships and therefore we cannot forge ahead. And we need to forge ahead as a country, as a unified country that stands for the rights of people, all people, every creed, every race, every nationality. And that's what we're here for, and that's what we should be doing. We should be protecting, and we should not be creating these divisions that is clearly un-American, and it is a huge problem, and we will pay price for that.
Absolutely, and I was just seeing a video today where the last protest, I think you mentioned, what that they beat up old people, even.
Yes. No, it was awful. I was watching the news. I started flipping channels today, and, you know, I watch them all. I watch NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox. I watch every channel because I always like to read and watch as much as I can to get the diverse opinions of all who participate in this dialogue. And so, you know, here I am watching elderly people getting beaten up. I mean, this is absurd. You know, the ratings of the television ratings attest to the fact that people are no longer watching the news because they don't believe the media because of everything you just said a few minutes ago. There is incertitude in our country. There is cynicism, and mistrust rules the day. And that has got to change.
Right. And you can't believe a word they say. I mean, I don't watch mainstream media at all anymore. And I should, like you said, because you do just to keep up with what they're saying and stuff. But I usually hear the real garbage they say, you know. But I don't watch it because I don't believe a word they say, you know.
Yep.
And this is
well, you know
this
what this reminds me of? Something funny, actually. So in order to lighten our conversation, this whole thing, what's happening with the media and what's happening in our country, even though it's not funny at all, it reminds me of the Animal House. I don't know if you ever saw the 1978 Belushi.
That's for sure. Well, thank you so much, Conchita, and I hope that you'll come on again. We learned a lot today. So thank you so much. Yes. Okay. Well, people, I say every week I have these guests on. I'm so lucky that I can get these top experts to come on. So thank you, and we will see you next week. Bye.
want you.